Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand. Created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
I'm Errol Lewis of the Daily News, in for Brian Lehrer. On AM 820 this evening, WNYC will be airing a debate between the Democratic candidates for New York Attorney General, the office currently held by Elliot Spitzer, who's the frontrunner in the race for governor. The four candidates for Attorney General, Andrew Cuomo, Mark Green, Sean Patrick Maloney, and Charlie King, will each explain why they are best suited to fill Elliot Spitzer's shoes. To find out more about the role of Attorney General and how Spitzer has shaped expectations for the office, I'm joined now by one of the former holders of that job, New York City Councilman G. Oliver Coppell. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Now, you served as Attorney General in 1994, right?
That's correct.
Mario Cuomo was the governor, and what was the situation that put you in that office?
Bob Abrams, who had been Attorney General for many years, 15 years, he resigned a year before the end of his last term. And the way in New York that the office is filled on a temporary basis, if you will, is the legislature meets in joint session and votes for a Attorney General or an Attorney General. So I was picked by the legislature. I was in the legislature at the time as a member of the State Assembly, and my colleagues chose me, which made me very proud, to be the Attorney General. Unfortunately for me, I had a vigorous primary, a tough primary, a four-way primary, which I didn't win. I came in second. The winner was a former judge by the name of Karen Burstein. That was in September of 94, after I had served for 8 months. And then she ran in the general election against Dennis Vacco, a Republican, who defeated her. And so Vacco became the Attorney General in 1995, and he served for 4 years. And at the end of his four-year term, there was again a primary. In fact, I ran again. This time, Elliot Spitzer won the primary and defeated Vacco in a very narrow election in the fall of, I guess that would have been 1998.
Okay. Well, thank you for that update. Full disclosure before we get started, are you endorsing any of your fellow Democrats in the current race?
No, I've made no endorsement in the race. I know them all, and I decided I would stay out of the primary.
Very well, then. Let's get to it. In last night's town hall, even the Republican candidate said she would do the job the way Elliot Spitzer has done it. What was so different about the way Spitzer ran that office?
Well, number one, he was very aggressive, although I don't think he was certainly the only one. I say with a lack of modesty that I feel I was pretty aggressive. But he did push the envelope, especially in the area of securities fraud and investor protection. And he was very, very aggressive going after corporate fraud and cheating of investors by investment companies, mutual funds, and such. He really pushed the envelope. The New York Attorney General's office, although it had jurisdiction over corporations that do business in the investment area and in corporations that have relationships with investors, had not been aggressive. The Attorney General's office had not been aggressive in areas that had basically been the preserve of the Securities and Exchange Commission. But the Securities and Exchange Commission became something of a paper tiger in the Bush administration, and too favorable, in my view anyway, to Wall Street and to the companies, both the corporations and the brokerage houses and investment banks, and ignored abuses which Spitzer pursued.
Let me ask you something about that.
It became really a national enforcement tool. The New York office became a national enforcement tool.
There's been a lot of talk about how Spitzer stepped into a real or perceived breach in the regulatory structure that the SEC maybe wasn't filling.
Right.
But as someone who held that job, how explicit is the state constitution on what the attorney general does or does not do, can or cannot do? Is it pretty detailed, or do you just have a mandate to go out and be creative about it?
Well, it's actually it's both, but you have specific mandates, specific areas of the law where the Attorney General's office has responsibility. For instance, just one example that pops into mind is the regulation of real estate regulation of co-op and condo offerings, where there's explicit provisions of law relating to that. But then there are provisions of the general business law that simply allow for investigation and ultimately prosecution of corporate fraud and also of deceptive practices. So, you know, when you're talking about deceptive practices or defrauding the public, you're talking about a very general framework which can be expanded upon depending on the interpretation, if you will, and also to some extent the allocation of resources of the office. You don't have unlimited number of lawyers and investigators, so you can aim your resources in a particular direction, and Elliott aimed his resources far more in terms of supervision of Wall Street investments, corporate conduct, mutual funds, than prior attorneys general.
I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, in for Brian Lehrer. I'm speaking with New York City Council member and former New York State Attorney General Oliver Capel about the Office of Attorney General. And we can take your calls if you have a question about the Office of Attorney General and what you think the responsibilities are or are not. Give me a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. You can also send us an email at Brian Lehrer Show, that's one word, at WNYC.org.
There's some very specific provisions that give the Attorney General jurisdiction over the issuance of securities in New York State, the so-called blue sky laws. And again, that's a handle that can be pursued more or less vigorously because you have joint jurisdiction over the issuance of securities between the SEC and the states. All the states have what they call blue sky laws, but different states are more aggressive than others in enforcing the blue sky laws.
Well, you know, these are the kind of issues that we wanted to talk about this morning, because in last night's town hall meeting, and no doubt it will repeat itself in some form in tonight's debates, the issues that came up repeatedly are the death penalty, Medicaid fraud, Con Edison, and the Public Service Commission. And understandably, those are issues that are hot-button issues that get voters' attention. But, you know, the question of whether or not the Attorney General has anything to do with them is something I'm hoping you can help us sort through. So let's start with the death penalty. What is the Attorney General's role there?
Well, the Attorney General has a very limited role because, although there probably are some offenses somewhere having to do with crimes against public officials or something where the Attorney General might get involved, and also the Attorney General can be appointed by the governor as a special prosecutor, where the district attorney locally, for one reason or another, is disqualified. The Attorney General can be a special prosecutor and therefore ask for the death penalty. In most cases, the death penalty would be relevant to criminal prosecutions that are the province of local district attorneys appointed on a county-by-county basis, not the Attorney General. Now, it's also true that the Attorney General, as a matter of historical precedent, makes recommendations on legislation. So the Attorney General could be involved in making recommendations to the legislature and to the governor on how a death penalty statute ought to be crafted, or conceivably making recommendations to eliminate the death penalty. He has a voice, but the death penalty really is not a major responsibility of the Attorney General.
In your time in the state legislature, did attorneys general weigh in, and did it carry much weight with
well,
you?
Most of the time that I was in the legislature, as I recall it, yes, I mean, Abrams would have been the attorney general, and he was against the death penalty.
Ari from Merrick, Long Island, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I just wanted to see what your guest and you thought of this. I basically have always thought that the attorney general is less of a consumer advocate and an oversight position, legislature, and really more of the state's chief prosecutor. In other words, making sure that all the local DA's offices are really up to snuff and doing what they're supposed to be doing.
So, no, that's not true. That's just not the... In some states, the attorney general is the chief law enforcement officer. That is not true in New York State. He's the chief legal officer, and he represents the state. But his job is not to oversee local district attorneys. That's not the job of the attorney general.
Councilman, does it bother you when you see people out campaigning saying, I'm going to be the chief law enforcement officer, I'm going to catch child predators and that sort of a thing?
Well, yeah, it does bother me because that's not the principal role of the attorney general's office. As we were just talking about it, there's some vague and general language both in the Constitution and in the statutes dealing with the powers of the office that give an awful lot of flexibility. But as a general matter, that's not the role of the attorney general. And if the attorney general says, if a candidate for attorney general says they're going to go out there enforcing the criminal laws, as a general matter, that's misleading, deceptive.
With Medicaid fraud, which is something that is getting a lot of attention in part because the thought is that it could save a lot of money for the state.
Right.
Is that something where the attorney general can weigh in more effectively?
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, there is a special office of Medicaid fraud prosecution, which is part of the attorney general's office. And in fact, under Dennis Vacco and now under Elliot Spitzer, they have taken very direct personal responsibility and jurisdiction over that office. When Abrams was, the office was established, I believe it was established during Abrams' administration as Attorney General, and it was a special state office, Assistant Attorney General for Medicaid Fraud, appointed by the Attorney General with the governor. And under Abrams, it basically ran as a separate office. And when I took over as Attorney General in 1994, there was a separate office that technically was under my jurisdiction, but Abrams had allowed it to run very independently. And I don't want to go into the history there. It had to do with a dispute between Abrams and the governor, and Abrams finally said, okay, let the office run independently. And so, and I didn't change that. I think I would have, by the way. I have no criticism of either Vacco or Spitzer for taking jurisdiction. But let nobody, not Elliot Spitzer or anybody else, say that that's not part of their responsibility. It is. And one of the ways you can judge the way Spitzer ran, and some people are critical, I know he defends himself on it, and I don't know enough to make a judgment on it. But the fact of the matter is that Medicaid fraud is the province of the Attorney General's office, and the degree to which that has been appropriately handled is one of the tests of whether the Attorney General is doing his or her job.
I'm Errol Lewis of the Daily News, in for Brian Lehrer. We are speaking with council member and former New York State Attorney General Oliver Capel, and we're taking calls at 212-433-9692. That's 433-WNYC. The other topic that came up a lot last night was going after Con Ed and the Public Service Commission in light of the power blackouts in Queens this summer. Can the Attorney General do anything there?
Yes, and here again, I think you got to give considerable credit to Abrams. During the Abrams attorney generalship, he played a very active role in utility regulation and supervision, and both as an advocate and I believe also in terms of some litigation. He had a utilities bureau. We did too. I did too, and I continued that. And that is a role that the Attorney General can play in going after utilities that don't follow their responsibilities under the public service law.
Does the Attorney General have the power to investigate and actually prosecute?
Yes. Generally speaking, yes. The scope of prosecution, I'm not going to you know, I don't know how I could address that off the top of my head. I'd have to go back and look. But investigation, absolutely, and under certain circumstances, prosecution. Yes.
Everyone promises to fix Albany, which was labeled the most dysfunctional state government in the country not long ago. What can the Attorney General do on that score?
Relatively little, except make recommendations, because the Attorney General is not only part of the system, but he's a lawyer for the system. So it's the Attorney General's job to defend the laws that are made by the legislature, and also the Attorney General's job to represent the governor. So if I'm your lawyer, are you going to look to me to reform what you do? I mean, your lawyer can make recommendations to you, but ultimately the lawyer has to defend what you do. So again, it's a little misleading. If someone says, you know, I'm going to become the Attorney General and I'm going to fix Albany, that's a little far-fetched.
Easier said than done.
The governor can say that he's going to fix Albany. Someone running for the legislature who's unhappy the way the legislature is run can say, I'm going to fix the legislature. But for the Attorney General to say it, it's a bit of hyperbole.
Mary Beth from North Salem, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. I'm calling about ticket scalping. I can't get a concert ticket because everything is taken up on the internet by scalpers.
Right.
And I've tried really hard to get tickets for something that I waited for a year, and we were unable to. And this was in the first hour of sales.
Yep.
And all these places are located out of state, and you have to pay hundreds of dollars per ticket. I was wondering, is there anything you can do about that?
Well, that's an interesting question. I did a lot of both prosecution and recommending in connection with ticket scalping. In fact, some people criticized me when I was Attorney General, made fun of me. several columnists did, because they said that this was not an important subject, but I think it is important to a lot of people, and it is possible to prosecute even some of the out-of-state operators who come into New York, and there are laws on the books dealing with ticket scalping, and they're not as vigorously enforced as they might be. I even prosecuted concierges who were ticket scalping in New York City, and we took a very aggressive position on ticket scalping, and it is something that you can do things about. But let me say, with the internet now, it's very tough. It's very tough to catch these people. I mean, they operate outside New York State, and finding them and getting after them. But I think more can be done. Quite honestly, I think more can be done in terms of regulation. There are two views on this, and it'd be interesting to hear the views of the candidates for Attorney General on this subject, because it is relevant to their jurisdiction. Some people say there shouldn't be any regulation at all. Just let ticket prices be subject to the market. Now, quite a few people say that. Other people say, no, this is something that's important to people, and middlemen shouldn't be making the money. I happen to be of the latter school. I think it's something that ought to be regulated, and people ought to be able to get tickets at least somewhat affordable prices, although tickets are getting so expensive now that I don't know if you can say really affordable.
We'll have to leave it right there. I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, in for Brian Lehrer. We've been speaking with Oliver Capel. Are you going to be watching the debate tonight, Councilman?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
You're listening to WNYC 93.9 and AM 820. The debate will be on tonight at 7 p.m.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.